they were in.
We've heard about a long wait. Ivan mentioned a long wait. Oliver mentioned a long wait. I have had a long wait as well, because about 14 years ago, I was engaged with somebody who was heading up the psychological therapies at Guy's Hospital. First, I was there receiving help about my work, and I stayed on for a very long time afterwards, because she then received help from me, because she'd become so interested in what my work was that had caused the problem in the first place. So it was a wonderful sort of skills exchange. And she made a memorable statement when we finally parted company. And she said, of all the professional disciplines that you are going to have a problem with about this totally riveting thing you have developed is my own. It is so counterintuitive that I'm afraid any psychoanalysts are going to sit there and use their intuition to decide it's not counterintuitive and fail to grasp the fact that it is. And you're going to have an enormous challenge. So I wrote down a little sentence about that, which the only time, other time I've ever addressed psychoanalysts or psychotherapists, I made that statement. And afterwards, every single one came up and said, could they have the prize, because they had actually followed what I said, and that they could absolutely grasp the counterintuition, intuitiveness. So I'm making it again just as a sort of reassurance policy. Please stay with me. There is something here. Also, good news. Well, there are two things, actually. One piece is a piece of good news about psychoeducation intervention. I think hopefully there is going to be one connected to what I'm telling you about, so possibly even more reason to take a look at it. And I just want to fill in a moment of background just to say that I come from a setting where I spent about 10 years tracking my mother through a rather remarkable dementia journey. My best friend, you listen when your best friend says something. I listened like mad for 10 years, and at the end of it, she taught me practically everything that I already know now. She left me with this blueprint, virtual blueprint, of what to do with her. And I didn't know if it was going to be applicable to anybody else. And then I arrived at a small community hospital, 11 beds, nursing development unit, where I spent 10 amazing years with nothing else to do except to find out whether it applied to anybody else. And that led to the development of a method. And then I've spent the most recent years, because that began in 1990, looking at what system do we need in place in order to make sure that the approach that my mother introduced me to, which then, on top of which I'd constructed some sort of methodology, and then we need a system for making sure that actually it gets taken forward, because it is a carer-driven model, and we need to empower the carers a lot more to be able to be in control of that model, in my view. So I'm not going to spend any more time on anything except clicking on at vast speed through this to give you the carer tool that we are giving carers in order that they can then go on to construct a model for managing lifelong well-being for their person with dementia. This isn't aspirational. We're actually achieving it, and we've achieved it for a very long time now, but we have been described as the best-kept secret in dementia care. And as I passed my 70th birthday, very, very recently, I decided that actually that's not the sort of exciting expression that I thought it was. I'm really ready for a bit of a shift there. So it's all about, and I'm in the right place to be talking metaphor, and I don't have to spend a lot of time saying this is a metaphor, and please take a leap of imagination. I'm going to use the metaphor of a photograph album to describe memory. I'm going to say, here it is, the actual prop, and I will be using it, provided I don't run out of time, just in a bit of kind of a role-play monologue to really demonstrate what I mean. But we need to just run through the ABC of it so that you understand a bit more of the monologue when it comes. We're saying that each of us is given at birth a memory system, and I'm going to call it a photograph album. Take it out of my head, leap of imagination, hold it in my hand, open in front of me. It is my most valuable resource. It is called my memory system. And from that point onwards, when I arrive in the world, everything that I see, hear, touch, feel, do takes the form of a photograph, which is put in my album with no effort from me whatsoever. The taking and the storing of photographs is an unconscious process going on in the background of my life. I'm too busy getting on with the next moment to be taking and storing photographs. But I do grow up knowing that I own this photograph album. contains everything that has been happening to me only moments before. Each photograph in the album has two distinct characteristics. The central portion, those dots there, represent the facts of what has just occurred a moment before in my life, and it's surrounded by a framework of feelings. So as I grow up, page after page after page of these photographs is pouring in. Gets bigger and bigger and bigger, my album. I carry it around wherever I go. It becomes my most valuable resource. Every time I go, let me think, I mean, let me look in my album for the information I need with which to process what I'm doing, where, with, and why. The album falls open quite naturally on today's page. That is where the latest photographs of what's just happened a moment before are pouring in. And it is today's page that I need to be dwelling on, really, 99% of the time. Every time I'm going, let me think, I'm going, let me think about what's just happened a moment before. I wouldn't have a clue who I was addressing here if I didn't have the photographs that I need to access very immediately before. You need actually the sentence that I've said just before in order to make sense of what I'm saying now. So we're going in and out. I'm slowing down a process which happens at lightning speed, but we're going in and out. We don't just know things, we have to check them out. It's open on today's page, conveniently in front, but of course we can turn back, but we very occasionally do, compared with the amount of time that we are spending referencing what is on today's page. What happens as we age? There is no process change as we age. Everything that I've experienced continues to be stored automatically in my album, and I continue, every time I go, let me think, I continue to go to my album for information. No process change there at all, but I do get slower at accessing the information that I need. So, staying within the metaphor, you know, I need glasses and I might have to just pop them on my nose before I have a look. I may not hear quite so well, so I'm going, what? Oh, yes, well, hang on, let me think. And then somebody else says something and I haven't actually got yet to what I need. And after a bit, I'm in a bit of a tizzy and everybody goes, oh, dear, there she goes. Neither of those people, you know, an awful lot of them, 750,000 people with dementia. Not at all. I have no actual process change. I'm doing what everybody else does, but I am slowing. And stepping outside the metaphor for a moment, actually, quite honestly, if I don't see as well and I need another pair of glasses, which I do, and somebody at the back did something quite extraordinary, I actually probably wouldn't see it. And if I don't see it, it's not in my album. It might be in somebody else's album. It happens to be up on the platform here. They could see it very clearly. But we only have in our album what we have actually experienced. So as I grow older, I may have less stuff in my album than others might expect me to have. But that has got nothing to do with anything except my poor eyesight, my hearing, and so on. All that has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with dementia. So if we stay with the metaphor, there is your continuing older age, no change. What is dementia, staying with the metaphor? Dementia is about a new type of photograph in the album. It's a type of photograph where the facts of what has just occurred a split second before are not recorded, although the feelings associated with those facts are recorded. As you can see, there is plenty of space for feelings now in that frame because it hasn't got to jostle with the facts. So we have a definition, a working definition from the point of view of managing dementia once it's being diagnosed, as dementia being a single change in process. It's a new type of photograph, a fact-free, feelings-only, dementia-related photograph that we call a blank. Contrast between normal photographs, which will continue to the end of time if somebody hasn't got dementia, and this new occurrence of a new type with dementia. We know, there it is, we know that once that has occurred, that new type of photograph, that blank, it will randomly and intermittently and increasingly frequently over time reoccur. And in due course, it's becoming so frequent that it's going to occur sequentially. And you're going to get long ribbons of lost factual information, but supported by the feelings that have occurred and are associated with those missing facts. If the person lives long enough, the process merely goes on and on it never ever gets any further than this. As long as a person with dementia lives, always, sooner or later, in their album, on today's page, will be a normal photograph. But by now, it's existing in a sea of these fact-free, feelings-only, dementia-related blanks. So we can now contrast, moving fairly swiftly on, because I don't intend to talk at all about pre-diagnostic, a random blip of lost information, stage one. Stage two, where the ratio of fully stored normal photographs is beginning to shift in favour of the blanks, which in passing comment is roughly about the stage where anybody is who comes to us. We get very early diagnoses where I come from, but they are all probably fast approaching that stage. And end-stage dementia, end-stage blanking, but certainly not necessarily end-stage life. You can live an awful long time with an album open in front of you like that, surrounded by an awful lot of people who have an album that looks like that. Now, go back one, sorry. Just returning to a normal album, we have feelings in it. We have seen that feelings have become very much more important than facts in terms of database for a person with dementia. So there's an enormous common ground between the normal and the dementia in terms of feelings. So they're obviously very, very significant, and we've had to look much more carefully at them. We have gone into dividing feelings up very simply into either okay, acceptable, or not okay, unacceptable. And we are going to go into colour, and we're going to have green for okay, acceptable, and red for not okay. Okay, acceptable, it wants to be written out as okay. There's Toro, the American author, wrote a line which said something like, most men live lives of quiet desperation. That's what we're setting as the norm for green. But so it follows that the vast amount of photographs in our album are by majority green. But for every single person at some point in their album, we will find unbelievably rare, but definitely there, an occasional resounding red. And that red equals trauma. We're not talking about, you know, a cup of tea with sugar when you don't take sugar. We're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder triggers, that sort of thing. Trauma. The day the favourite dog got run over in the road outside the house. Ah! Red. You have to do something when red comes into the album. By definition, it is wholly unacceptable. And you have to take action of some sort, a very powerful action. But powerful action comes into play, a trigger that drives you forward to do something. And so down here, deciding how to tell the children when they came home from school, burying the dog, you know, it's not great, but qualitatively we're talking about something very, very different from that red moment of trauma. It goes back, life goes on green after that, but that red will always be there in the album. Now, having established that most of our life is on green, okay, acceptable, and having established that every time we go, let me think, let me look in my album, it is possible as we go to look for information in our album that we may come across, it's not very likely, but we might come across a page which has one of those reds in it. Without dementia, it is very unlikely indeed that I'm going to go, oh, good, I must concentrate on that one. I don't. It's not that I deny it's there, but I'm on a green search for some green information. I will go around it, and back comes my album on green, and on I go. That is without dementia. Something hideous happens when we introduce colour into the album of a person with dementia in order to understand it better. It helps us to understand why it's a complete anomaly that dementia is not on the list of post-traumatic stress disorder triggers. It shouldn't only be on the list, in my view. It should be at the very top. And we need to look at why. I need to be able to substantiate that statement. So I'm going to take a day in the life of, well, 2 days in the life of Dolly with dementia. That will be me, but I shall have a hat on. You will be able to, I hope, clearly differentiate, difference between me talking as Dolly and something else I might have to say to you afterwards. Please don't muddle the two up, if you can. We're going to take a day in the life of Dolly at home. So she's getting to, she's around about the point of diagnosis, beginning to shift towards almost 50-50. We're going to take a dementing event, if you like, which happens at breakfast, and there it is. I'm not very good at this pointer. I'm not going to use it in case I lose my track. That ribbon, as we call it, of lost factual information, which is around, because I'm very short of time, I'm going to describe to you what it is. If you came to Burford, where I come from, this whole presentation, would you believe, would take miles over an hour. So you can see I'm sort of trying to compact it down. So I'm just going to fill you in about the dementia event at breakfast. We're not going to have high drama about that. At breakfast, I'm talking to my husband. He's telling me what he's going to do during the day. I'm telling him what I'm going to do during the day. I actually am going to hopefully be winning the flower contest with a little bit of miniature flower arranging. Drives him mad to hear about it. He's telling me about his tennis, and he's terribly bothered about whether it's going to rain, but he's a glass half-empty merchant, absolutely maddening. I'm quite the opposite. All of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, in the course of conversation, he asked me to post a letter. And I am very happily going to post the letter. It isn't a problem to me. Actually, he retired at that moment when he got to the dizzy heights of getting a secretary, and then when he retired, he expected an awful lot of me. And I discovered that actually wives make very bad secretaries, so I'm pretty determined to do something useful about this letter. Unbeknown to me, that bit of conversation stores as a series of blanks. I've got to emphasise that the arrival in the album, the storage of photographs, is an unconscious activity going on in the background of our lives, unobserved by me, unobservable by anybody else at the time of storage. It's only later, which may be a split second later or much later, that we're going to see the impact of the search and retrieval process. So no problem there. It's green, it's benign. Fast track forward to supper, and something hideous happens at supper for Dolly. Simply hideous trauma. It is, she's still storing quite a lot, and that one happens to store as a full normal red. And so the full normal powerful mechanism comes into play, and Dolly will take action of some sort in response to that red. However, we can fast track forward to a time when Dolly is much later on, and I will use some sort of pashmina to indicate passage of time to speed up again, to get me into the care home, Happy Lands care home. And there I am, and you can see hardly storing anything at all in terms of normal photographs. And we could take any of these as an example of the dementia-related blank. It's benign, it's unobserved by me, unobservable by anybody else at the time of storage. And it concerns something to do with birthdays. Again, a hideous thing happens for Dolly. Absolute high trauma. And it stores now, as most photographs do in her album, as a blank, a red blank. A red blank is unknown to any of us without dementia. And it has got no facts there, where a powerful mechanism comes into play to drive Dolly forward to take action of some sort. There are no facts there. And this is what is going to arise. I think I will show you what happens rather than describing it. And I should be all right in the time, I hope. Don't think I've got to tell you anything else much, except that I am going to be using my album. I shall have hat on head. I'm hoping, like all the other speakers who all started with the bad news first and hoping there's time for the good news. We have so much good news that actually once I've got this over and done with, I shan't be saying anything except good news, but I do hope there'll be 30 seconds for me to just reassure you on that. All our work is unbelievably positive at Burford Hospital for the last nearly 25 years this year. Every Friday there's been a group running of people with dementia at all stages, including end-stage dementia, can't get any worse, and none at all. And the casual visitor cannot tell us who is who. I don't know anywhere else in the world where you can't pick out people in end-stage dementia. So, on that sort of credential platform, please listen to what happens without that approach, and then hopefully I shall be able to whiz back to click on to tell you the absolute basic fundamentals of what we put in place. We call it the Speckle approach, this understanding. Then it's got its method, then it's got its system. You can see why, actually, in 30 minutes, I am not going to give you the whole works, which you'll be very grateful anyway. Avoid data overload for the person with dementia is one of our great cries, and I think avoid data overload for everybody else is probably a good idea as well. Hat on. Hope I don't have to keep taking it off. I never used to have a hat. And then one ghastly day at Burford, we were in the presentation. I had said, please don't interrupt unless there's something that I say that you just don't understand as a standalone statement. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the monologue, a hand waved. Excuse me. As I said, she said, have you got dementia? This is a long time ago, before the likelihood of anybody listening to anyone with dementia. Things have changed an awful lot in the time I've been in the arena. But in those days, it would have been unheard of to have been listening to a person with dementia. And when she got the definite impression that probably I had, she raised her feet. She was about 6 foot tall, terribly statuesque, leant down and said an awfully loud voice to her next-door neighbour, I'm so sorry, I'm afraid I should have to go. I thought I was going to come here and learn something. All I'm being asked to do is listen to this woman with dementia. She was out of the door. Next day, I was at the Oxfam shop purchasing said hat. Hat on, Dolly with dementia. Hat off, I've got something to say afterwards. You what? Would I face a letter? Of course I will. Of course I will. No problem with me at all. No, no, no. I shall be just like that secretary of his that he misses so much. Supper. I do enjoy supper. Talking about what we've been doing. What? You won. You won your tennis. We are in for a good evening. Oh, good. When I can get a word in edgeways, I want to talk about my... Yes, no, I didn't win this miniature. No, not again, unfortunately. Absolutely maddening. No, no, no. The thing was, I got the twig, but she had this piece of... What? Did I what? Did I post a letter? I do what I always do when I'm asked a question. I go to my album for information. Letter. No, I didn't post a letter. Why not? Another question. Why not? However am I going to tell him this? I didn't post a letter because there wasn't a letter to post. What's happening now? He's gone out of the room. He's coming back in. He's waving my handbag like a complete lunatic, red in the face, never stops talking. Absolute nonsense. I'm thinking to myself, I hope he's not going to be ill again. Do you know, getting men to the doctor the last time he was ill. He's obviously... And in fact, I must take a hand. Can you sit down? Stop waving my handbag around like a lunatic. You're going to have a stress-induced stroke. Just sit down and we'll sort this out. I don't normally get cross, but I'm just getting a bit apprehensive about this now. Pass over the handbag. Thank you. I don't want to be told where to look for this letter because I am actually going to empty the whole of my handbag to show you. I know it's going to take quite a long time, and get your hands off it. I'm going to be showing you here. I know it's got a lot of zips. And in here, you see absolutely no sign. I know there's a mess, but I can tell you, look, no. Heart is racing, my ears are buzzing, and I'm thinking, how can this possibly be? My album? It's never let me down. Well, not like this. And he's talking, and I can't think of a thing except a hideous thought has just struck me. Hang on. If this happened this morning without how many other times has it happened? And how would I possibly...
they know?
What happens next?
Wake up in the morning.
I feel sick. Whatever is the matter with me? I do what I always do. I go to my album for information. I look back. Ah, there it is. Red. I knew something hideous has happened. What is it? Oh, no. Oh, Lord, yes. Oh, that moment of supper last night. That letter. When I had incontrovertible evidence that something was... It was in his album. It should have been in mine. And it wasn't there. I must find that letter. Where is it? I'll hunt until I find it, because... Aha, there it is. I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to make a plan. I'm going to put it somewhere and make a plan. I do wish my children came to see me more often. When? This morning? No. I just wish my children came to see me more. What? Look, why don't you? There are a lot of people here. Why don't you go and find whose children they were? I just wish my children came to see me more. You what? Birthday? How lovely. How lovely. Whose birthday? Mine. Well, when? Today. Today? Don't be ridiculous. I'd know if it was my birthday today. I've been doing what? I know that's my handbag. I like my handbag. I always have to have this. I've been doing what? I've been opening and what? Shutting it all afternoon and taking out a brightly coloured envelope and no, I don't want you to tell me or show me. But she's going to. I can tell. She wants to show me so nicely that if she has a little look, if she may, in my handbag, she's going to find a bright... does she know everything about me and I don't? What happens next? I feel terrible. What is it? I look back. Oh, no. Red. I knew something terrible would happen now. Right. Okay. Now what do I do? I must do something. But hang on. There's nothing there to tell me. To tell me. I've got to do something. I don't know what... I haven't lost my reason. I only lost my information. I'm going to have to do a very reasonable thing. I'm going to have to go back and try and find something. Please, please, please let me find... Oh, thank God. Goodness for that, a red. Now, oh no, the dog and the children. I must go. I'm afraid the dog. Very kind, but very firm, restraining hand on my arm and a voice going, "That's all right, Dolly, tea trolley will be around in a minute and you can have a nice cup of..." It's not that I don't like your tea, it's just afraid I've got to go. I'm not getting anywhere. And every time I look down my album, I see this. We can't do this. I haven't lost my reason. I've only lost my information. And I'm going to do the only thing I possibly can. I'm going to try shutting the album. I'd rather look at the black of the outside cover than I would risk opening it. Oh, catching sight of the insupportable sea of red. No. no, I'm just going to sit here and hold it as everything I've got. And I'm not letting anybody else open it either. No. No. I'm just going to sit here. And if I think of nothing else whatsoever, it's going to be holding it very close to me and very tightly shut. And when I hear two voices above me going, right, Sheila, should we do Dolly next? Yeah, let's do Dolly next. I think to myself, I don't think I know much about anything anymore except one thing. Oh, yes, I'll get up. But I'm not opening this album for anyone ever again. We're in the there's minus 2 minutes left. We're in the business of greening albums. We have introduced three very basic golden rules. They start off, and these are for anyone coming into contact with a person. Don't ask direct questions because the facts may not be there. Try finding a questioner's question technique, which is what we teach carers. It works brilliantly. Post-diagnosis, I'm talking about. Learn from the expert. Who's the expert? Goodness me, is it not the person with dementia? They are absolutely expert at handling this album. They're expert at matching old photographs to substitute with facts for the ones that they're missing today. Absolutely expert, and we trip them up all the time. We listen to the expert. Their questions are highly significant. Why? Because when we ask a question, all of us, what are we doing? We don't know the information. We can't find it. It's important to us. They are no different. Don't contradict. Don't argue about whose album, yours or theirs, we're going to be discussing. If they've started talking about something, they're using their album. Don't contradict about the album, don't contradict about the page, and don't contradict about the photograph. General principles applicable to any person with dementia that will make the most amazing difference. Most of the trauma in dementia is coming from an incontrovertible bit of evidence that somebody else owns factual information about what you've just been doing that you should be owning yourself. To be jammed on a red trauma without knowing what has caused that trauma, in my view, comes at the top of the post-traumatic stress disorder triggers. And once we understand that, we have simply got to do something about it. That is what I was left with by my mother as a way of understanding, and that is what I have been devoting my life to ever since. How do we green albums and not have them red? And the difference between somebody with an all-green album in the end stages of dementia and an all-red, I'm not going to revisit that. I'll talk about it a bit later if there's a chance. Because we are seeing at end-stage dementia virtually all the photographs coming in as blank, there is only a choice between acceptable green or trauma red. What is the difference between one person with an album like that sitting in a care home and one person sitting like that? The door opens, somebody comes in with an album like that. Who's that? I need to know. Go to my album for information. Can't find anything. And yet, with this, door opens. I need information. Who is that coming through? Go to my album for information and, doesn't seem very much here, but it all looks all right. Hello, dear. Absolute no-brainer about what we should be doing managing dementia. Nothing to do with diagnosing, curing, preventing, medically treating, but managing it. We have to empower the family carer with a tool that will last right through to the end of time. And I passionately believe that this will do it. We're having evidence that it will do it. We hope to have research that it does it. And if anybody knows anywhere in the world another tool which will deliver well-being, sustainable, 24 hours a day, every day for life, will they please come and tell me? Because I also want to go back to other things in life. But at the moment, and until this is either off the ground or somebody comes and says, got it already, I seem to be spending, and I hear my husband across a crowded room, they say, where do you live? And he goes, well, I live at Broadwell, near Stow-on-the-Wold, and my wife lives at Burford. And I think, you know, people might get the wrong impression about our relationship. We do actually join forces occasionally, but not enough. So please, I rest my case.
Do you want to stay up there, Penny? I was just wondering rather, and perhaps if you and Oliver would like to sit on the platform. We've got 10 minutes for questions. I'm sure you're all dying.
I've only got mine to lend you.
Are you going to sit on either side of a green photograph?
Well, yes, we could. Why not?
That seems...
How pathetic.
I'll just speak louder. Or we can exchange
just
the questions.
Yes, I can come and sit on your lap and you can kind of...
Right then. Okay, well, thank you very much indeed. Penny, for that remarkable piece of psychodrama. That was really very moving. I think I've got the first question already, gentlemen, there. Can I pass you the mic, or can you...
It's not really a question. I just wanted.
Say who you are.
Yeah, I'm James Murray White. I was lucky enough to show my film last night in the upstairs. I'd just like to say that I did Penny's course at Burford about 2 years ago, and it remarkable. So it really helped change my relationship with my mother. The trouble is, though, unfortunately, it's getting it into the care world. I think we talked about it at the time, Penny, and I guess that hasn't changed much at all. I've had carers who just kind of, you know, I give every carer a copy of your book, and I try and practice it. It drove me mad at first for the first 6 months, but, you know, it really works. But the carers just refuse to read it. Sadly, we have a carer at the moment who has reading impairment, so that's an issue, and I can't sit and explain. You know, I would love to send every carer to Burford, but I just hope it does get into the mainstream more. So,
thank you. Can I say something?
Of course.
I have brought a supply of booklets because actually no busy carer is going to read a book, and in a sense, you don't really necessarily want to read the details of an operation, a surgical operation. There are masses and masses to go round, and I couldn't recommend more that spouse carers do not read the book. They need the booklet, if anything at all. Spouse carers actually start with need kind of almost leaving alone, and where we can, it's a family-driven model, but my great cry always when people are ringing in or emailing in is, where are the offspring? Are there any? Because they're, you know, such as yourself, that they're who we need. Now, if there aren't offspring, then that's fine. We can look at other things. But are we making any progress? I hope we are, because we're moving on the post my 70th birthday. I haven't half got into first gear instead of sort of going in overdrive about what we do all the time, you know, round. And research does look as if it's on its way. Very, very basic. For us, incredibly expensive. Don't know where the money's come. Light the candles. And so on. But also, we're looking at a locality model where you can start to really get some focus on a single case and all their team around them. It's very counterintuitive, this, and it's hard to sell. If you can get a team working around one person, such as you, your family, sure. Then we get some, and I think we're on our way with that.
Lovely. Okay. Thank you very much indeed. This is a stooge in the audience. I'm just joking. lady at the back, there, you've got a question.
It's a question for Oliver Turnbull.
Okay.
Did you imply in the motion based blind diagnosis that there are no irrational feelings?
No, I never said that at all.
Yeah.
The role of emotion in irrational and delusional beliefs is really quite well established, but that's a different talk. I wasn't suggesting anything about irrationality at all. The emotion-based learning worldview is about associating affect with objects. You know, sometimes inappropriately, the world of advertising is entirely built on, you know, putting something attractive next to something unattractive in the hope that the attractive thing will leech over onto the less attractive thing. So there's plenty of opportunity for irrationality in that. I think that the issue that I'm trying to get forward is to promote the multiple memory system, and the fact that we all have, you know, we're running multiple memory systems in parallel, but in a number of neurological conditions, you can have a loss of one without impairment of the others, and that has complex implications. Yes, I was very interested. I mean, plainly, it's all about the preservation of affect in patients who are amnesic. And you can certainly, I could even see, although I don't have enough experience to know how one could indeed become phobic about accessing episodic memory in the first place. If that produces only negative experiences, you would be, by associative learning, you know, driven away from an aversive experience about remembering.
The interesting thing is that as soon as you take out red in the present, and the quickest way to inflict red on a person with dementia is to make them unnecessarily aware of something they were previously unaware of, because a lot of talk about loss of self. There is no greater loss of self apart from, I've seen a daughter getting who got drunk one evening at an office party and then had to go through the ignominy of never really knowing what on earth she did, but it was obviously quite entertaining to everybody else. And that's been a serious red for her. Now, she can never really get at that. And that's the nearest I've almost got to the equivalent of a red for a person with dementia. But it's the loss of ownership of your own information about your own life, and the caregiver can enormously protect against unnecessary insight. The insight, in my view, is there into dementia. They're the first people to know. The person with dementia is the first person to know long before anybody else does. That realization and that knowledge that there's something extraordinarily wrong with them lasts right through until they die. But it's impossible not to think it's very odd not to know what you've just been doing. And they know they don't know what they've just been doing. But you can reduce it down to a virtual benign state. And curiously, those three golden rules will stop the unnecessary confrontation with the fact that the other person may know more about you than they do.
Absolutely. Lady in the... Is it fourth? Yes, fourth row from the front. Yes.
I was lucky enough to show a film about my father last night as well.
Right.
It's so interesting because part of our film shows my father in red space. And over time, I learnt to intuitively kind of deal with that. But I wish I'd known more about your approach then. However, with the passing of time, you know, that's the approach that I use with him. And it's great to hear you talking about it. But to watch it on film is really interesting, to watch the panic develop in him. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. And I think that we're going to hear quite some work from Andrew later.
Thank you. This is a question for Penny, please. I'm just curious about those three golden rules that she brought up, specifically the first one about not asking direct questions. I work on older adults in patient units, so deal a lot with people with dementia. I'm just wondering how practically, you know, if you need to find that information about how a person is doing, or, you know, very practical things, how you can avoid direct questioning. Do you have any tips, please?
Do I have any tips? Yes, I do. And we do run a whole workshop on what we call the questioner's question technique. But the very first step is to start using your own album rather than trying to ferret about in theirs. So you've only got to say, I mean, Oliver's example in the book was, do you want a cup of tea? Well, what do any of us do when we're asked if we want a cup of tea? At lightning speed, we go, have I got to make it? Have I got enough money? Am I going to be the only person drinking it? Flash, flash, flash. consultation. Actually, and then you come up with the answer. It's not a problem if you've got a full album on today's page. You can work that out. But for somebody with blanks, you've only got to say to a person with dementia, we've got about 8 different ways of framing the start of the question, but it'll go something like, I was wondering about having a cup of tea. And all you'll get is, well, make it 2. I drink coffee. Don't care if you do. I'll knit while you go. You start getting your information. And then on top of that, if you came to a workshop, we've got something called speckle observational tracking, SPOT toolkit. You start to spot the questions that are they're about to ask before they actually ask them, and you can provide the information. And you start spotting for yourself what questions you could ask somebody else rather than them, and then use this question technique for what you do need to ask them about. But I was wondering whether, and it occurred to me that, and another one I use an awful lot is I met somebody at the bus stop, which reduces our team to hilarity, because they said, when did you last take a bus? And I said, well, it's a wonderful generic place to have been, non-threatening. I met somebody who said something about the fact that geraniums were much better than pelargoniums. Oh, the other person interrupts. Absolute rubbish. No, no, no. And they're off on a topic that I might have wanted to discuss. So rules 4 and 5 are stop talking as soon as the other person starts and don't interrupt. And generally, with a few techniques that I can certainly pass on to you, you get on like a house on fire, but obviously not if you're conducting assessments with a view to diagnosing or anything else. We're talking about post-diagnostic stuff.
Okay, there's a lady over here.
Yes. I was wondering about your comment about this not being helpful to spouses, the sort of throwaway remark at the end.
The book.
Yeah, uh-huh.
The book not being very... this is only experientially based, but we've been doing this for a long time. The book's now been out for 6 years. We've discovered that the book is just... I've got so much to say about the fragility of main spouse carers, particularly if they are an older spouse carer. They are, I'd love to have Matt from the Daily Telegraph for a day, actually, with our work to get a few cartoons out. Because to me, the carer is hanging on by their fingernails by the time we actually are in touch with them.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're starting to ask them to go to the University of the Third Age and start reading a book, particularly which is going to project into the future, in a way that they haven't actually grasped to start with, this huge paradigm shift that they've got to take, which is that they hold the key to the experience of their person, which is why coached carers at Burford, we are getting this extraordinary outcome that you cannot pick the people out. Mm. But I heard a conversation in the corridor not very recently, and somebody has stopped this chat, and he said, John, hello, how's Mary, who was one of our people? And he paused, and he said, well, I don't know, it's a bit confusing, really. She's miles worse in one way. But he said, it doesn't matter anymore. And the reason it doesn't matter is because we've bookmarked Mary's album with useful pages that do very well. And that's what we call making a present of the past. We're using past facts in the present in a highly practical way to link to activities of daily life. Because anyone can fiddle in the middle with a bit of therapeutic conversation. But can you do the carer, the carer stuff? But really, we need to be very, very gentle, in my view, with carers, and just work with. And I don't know if you use the word flippantly. I am quite flippant with some of the things that just toss off the top of my head, because for years I thought that we send the wrong person to the memory clinic after diagnosis. It's us who need to have good memory tricks up our sleeve so that we can remember for ourselves, remember for them, keep turning the pages of our album, their album, where are they, and so on. And I think to some extent I have to say that we probably send the wrong person for psychotherapy.
Yeah. So thank you very much indeed. We really are over time, and I'm sure that, Penny, you'll be around this afternoon. So
yes, you'll be able to buttonhole Penny and Oliver later on this afternoon, perhaps over tea. What time are we coming back after lunch? 2:15. So, sorry, just getting the timetable from the organisers. 2:15. Could you be back here by 2:15, please? Thanks very much.